continuing from yesterday's theme, in which I gave an overview, no doubt could be called a subjective overview, of how Srila Prabhupada's International Society for Krishna Consciousness has undergone a deliberate Hinduization, academization, is there such a word, and welfareization, making up a few words here. Incidentally, this is not only my subjective opinion, but a scholar, actually, now when we use the word scholar nowadays, we usually use that to mean someone in the university, but actually scholar should refer to Vyasadeva, Jiva Goswami, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This is the real meaning of scholar. Anyway, Burke Rochford, who's an established American university scholar, sorry for not being able to tell you which university, you can look it up if you like. He published a book a few years ago called Hare Krishna Transformed, in which he gave an overview of how our movement has not only changed, but been deliberately changed from within, from a revolutionary monastical order to one living at peace with the secular society, and more family-based, and how women's roles have been the emphasis on renunciation is not there, and women are supposed to get a more equal, how about that? Sounds like an Animal Farm term. More equal share of the power pie within ISKCON. So, our movement has changed and has been deliberately changed, and those who have changed it happen to be the powers that be, so those that don't agree are considered troublemakers or dissenters or whatever, because you're not following the powers that be. I'm not the only one who is unhappy that the movement has been changed without any consultation with me. They say, well, why don't you discuss, if you have any grievances, you should discuss it. But no one discussed with me before starting all these different programs which changed everything. Which changed the whole direction and purpose. Ultimately, I mean, we have Prabhupada's purposes, but the movement as it's set up today is not very clearly set up to fulfill those purposes. In the public eye, it's a social welfare movement here in India. And in some countries, it's a Hindu society. So, yeah, and Varnashram, just like this, I don't think it's official, but unofficially, and very clearly, as I've been told by various leaders in our movement the term, we are not to use the term Varnashram, which Prabhupada said there's now 50% of my work is to be done, which is to establish Varnashram. And we're not allowed to use that word with the reasoning that people may misunderstand it for the caste system. I personally think it's because some people up there, they don't want Varnashram. They want something more like, you know, modern so-called egalitarianism. Varnashram means, for instance, that women would have subordinate social role, which is very clear from Shastra, very, very clear from Prabhupada's teachings, but very unpopular in the dominant part of the world today, that means the Western bloc. Although we tend to think, when we say world opinion, we tend to think of whatever comes out of the news agencies owned by Rupert Murdoch et al. But there is still a large part of the world, like the Muslim world, which is not an insignificant part of the world, which is being influenced by that, but still doesn't believe in that. Anyway, if you have a fear that Varnashram is misunderstood as the caste system, then do what Prabhupada did. Prabhupada repeatedly used the term Varnashram and preached. This should be instituted. And if people, they brought up the objection about the caste system, then Prabhupada would explain, that's all. It's much easier just to tell the members of ISKCON just to shut up and don't talk about Varnashram than to preach to the world that this is what should be, this is required for sanity in human society. So you don't even want to say the word. It's like a banned word now. Within us. Of course, you may say, well, we have to gradually, maybe after some generations. Maybe that may be the reasoning, I don't know. But Prabhupada wanted to institute it immediately. It's not that generations later, we're already at least one generation late. Now, what about the unity and diversity? Why don't we all live together happily with all different opinions? Well, there are limitations to that. How diverse can you be and still remain united? I strongly object to being part of a movement. I don't want to be part of a movement that's seen as a Hindu social welfare friendly with the squalors movement. I don't want to be part of that. So, the unity is there in as much as I can either be part of it or I can leave it. I can either be part of it and complain and just go on with life, or I can leave it. So I chose to remain and complain. But it's not really unity. Real unity is when we have the same purpose, but we have different approaches in manifesting it. But like I say, I see the very purpose, the means. Maybe theoretically, those who don't even want to talk about Varnashram are really into it. They lie awake at night thinking, how can we institute Varnashram? But I doubt it. So, there's when the means become so different, then the end also becomes different. It's just like karmakanda doesn't lead to, if you do karmakanda rituals, that doesn't lead you to pure devotional service. I guess you could say there's a unity in as much as it's all within the Vedic culture. But that's condemned by pure devotees. Of course, you could, karmakanda, some people would say, well, that leads to bhakti, you see, through karma, then you come to jnana, then you come to bhakti, but it doesn't work unless there's a pure devotee who comes and tells you that jnana, what is it, karmakanda, jnana kanda, kevala, vishara, bhanda, bhanda, amrita bolia jeba kai, nana joni shada fire, kadarja bakhanna kore, tara janma adha pate jai. The pure devotees like Narottam Das or Prabhupada, who often quoted this, they come and tell you that this karma kanda and jnana kanda are simply pots of poison which are considered nectarian by persons who partake of their contents. But resultingly, they get repeated births, they wander around the universe eating all kinds of horrible things, and they get degraded down to the lowest level. So karma kanda is within the, definitely it's within the Vedic culture, but it's not praised by pure devotees. It may be considered just marginally acceptable. It's better than being outside the Vedic culture, Srila Prabhupada more than once said that. He said it's better to be a meat-eating Kali worshipper than a Christian, because at least you're within the Vedic culture. But we're not recommending people to worship Kali and start doing, killing goats and all this kind of thing, as Kali worshippers do. And although we may say that, well, all right, worship of Kali is within the Vedic culture, we're not going to promote it. So, in the same way, these things like promoting ourselves as we're welfare workers or that we're Hindus, it's not what you could say. There's some marginal area for that within Krishna consciousness, but it's not how we promote ourselves. It changes our identity. It changes our identity so that we speak, we have to end up speaking in a way completely different to that which Prabhupada did, and which is against, and actually misrepresenting the philosophy as that was quoted in a Maharashtra newspaper. One of the prominent members of our movement in India was quoted as saying that we believe to feed a hungry child is the best way to serve Lord Krishna. So it's a gross misrepresentation of our philosophy. And when he says it, and no one, because you're not supposed to offend Vaishnavas, no one will say anything against it. And so others who come to our movement think that the best way to serve Lord Krishna is to feed a hungry child. So, it's a different message, and it's a different voice. So, the diversity becomes too much. And then where's the unity? Should we even be united with that which has diversified itself from the teachings of Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas? Of course, by various ways, persons may try to justify by taking Prabhupada's quotes out of context or emphasizing some quotes of Prabhupada and completely forgetting the main body. Not forgetting, but deliberately avoiding to present the main body of Prabhupada's teachings, they'll try to promote all this. So there are limits to unity and diversity. It's not just, you know, everyone just do whatever they like and say Jai Prabhupada, and that's our unity. We all come together and say Jai Prabhupada. So why not out-preach them? Well, numerically we are overwhelmed because, as Prabhupada noted, the diamond seller has less customers than the glass bangle seller. So people tend to go toward that which is easy and cheap, and if you think you can get bhakti by, you know, feeding poor people or something, of course you may say it's prasad. I've discussed all these in other things, but it's not. It's definitely not the. We have no objection to giving prasadam to poor people, but it shouldn't be emphasized that we are a poor feeding movement. Srila Prabhupada was clearly against that, emphasizing that to present ourselves as a movement that feeds the poor. So that will naturally appeal to people, many people. If we tell them you have to give up sense gratification, surrender to Krishna, that the poor will always be with us, you cannot. Real welfare work is to surrender to Krishna. This school syllabus is all demoniac. If we say all things like, when they're promoting, see, now India's becoming advanced, we're sending all the kids to school and they're all getting a good education, which Prabhupada was so much against, and we're promoting that and supporting that, then people are already programmed in that way, and so it's easier for them to go along with. So we may get more followers, and it may seem to be more successful, but it's not the real thing. And within our movement, we are numerically overwhelmed by those who want to preserve the original spirit of Prabhupada. They are numerically overwhelmed by those who have redefined it. So he may say we should out-preach them. Yeah, but we can't expect to get so many followers. And the rules of ISKCON are made by those who are in position, and they tend to put in position those who agree with them, which I guess is natural. Of course, satyam eva jayate, the truth will prevail. That is always there. But our movement is meant for widely circulating the truth. It's not meant to be just for a few people. And some things, they are, we're talking about university and diversity, but some things are irreconcilable. Just like, for instance, for reasons that I've explained elsewhere, I don't agree that there should be women GBCs. One reason being that Prabhupada never appointed any women GBCs, and he was definitely against women being in leadership roles. So, the present GBC is for having women GBC. Now what's the middle ground? There is no middle ground. Either you have them or you don't have them. What do? You have them 6 months a year and then off for 6 months a year. Chop them in half. Oh, now I'm going to get in trouble. You better edit that one out. Chop them in half. Bring half a woman to the GBC. Have just a few. That's going on now. They have token women GBCs, although no doubt certain devotees would like to. You can either promote that we are Hindus and then people think that we're Hindus, or you don't. There's no like half. What's the halfway? There is no halfway. Either you do it or you don't. So yeah, it's not a diversity of approach, but a fundamental, unbridgeable differences between those who want to promote Varnashram again, and those who don't. No Harinam, I was told a few years ago when I was in England, I don't know if it's true now, that devotees are not allowed to do Harinam in the streets of Oxford because they have the Oxford Centre for Hindu Studies or something there. So they don't want to have, for some reason or other, they think that having Harinam there would, I don't know, that I was told this, that They don't want to have Harinam, and it's not allowed to do so. Slightly redefining Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Jato Nagara Adigram. Harinam should be everywhere, but you know, there's no midway. Either you do it or you don't. That's all. Either you do Harinam in Oxford or you don't do it. You can't half do it. So, some of the statements I've made here may offend some. That's a fact. I've said such things before, and I've seen that some devotees get much offended, which isn't good. And I don't know how to say things in such a way that people won't get offended. But I also feel, you know, I feel hurt and cheated, and I feel, I may be wrong, but I feel that we are cheating others in Prabhupada's name by presenting something different to what Prabhupada's presented. I don't think that those who are making all these fundamental changes in Prabhupada's movement are insincere. They definitely want to serve Prabhupada. They're given their life for doing that. But the differences are real and deep, and actually the last infamous lecture I gave, or series of lectures I gave on this subject, did cause some stir, went up to the GBC level. But then when I met GBCs, I asked them, you know, actually that was just meant to inform my disciples. At least I feel it's my duty as a guru to say to, at least to my disciples, who I'm supposed to be guiding and following Srila Prabhupada, that this is the way it should be. Now, if you don't think I should say that, maybe you should remove me as a guru. But I feel it's my duty to say so. And when I asked how or what should I say to my disciples, then there's no answer for that. They say, well, you should go through the GBC process if you have any differences of opinion. But like I say, the people, they didn't go through any GBC process when they brought in all these new things. It might be stifling if for everything you had to get GBC approval, because the GBC processes work very slowly. And as I said to my GBC godbrothers, who dealt with me in a very considerate manner, I must say, I'm not complaining about that at all. That my experience in trying to go through GBC process is that they go so slowly that they don't work. It's like, you know, someone brings out some statement, something like, you know, gays are considered auspicious in Vedic culture. This was one of the first things I came out against years ago. And then you go to a GBC, first you talk to the person, have email exchanges, then you go to a GBC process, and it drags on over years, and in the meantime, this idea is out there in the ether with no one to say anything against it. So, going through the process drags on, and in none of the issues that I raised, it came to termination, except the one about certain sannyasi from the Gauriya Math, which the GBC eventually stepped in and did something about that. So these are some of the, I've just discussed some of the major trends which I see as redefining our movement from that which Prabhupada gave. And there are all kinds of things on the side, like what is that, hypnotic regression. The GBC of a country comes once a year and does a seminar on hypnotic regression. The next year he comes and gives ones on laughter therapy. And we're not allowed to say anything because of Vaishnava Aparad. So there are big things and there are small things. And it won't stop. It's not going to. All these things, like the Hinduization and the welfareization and the academization. There's big money in it, especially in the welfare thing. Big leaders of our movement are behind it. There's a big positive, we have to say, public response, which maybe also helps us who don't believe in these things to be better accepted also by the public. Of course, they don't know. They accept us for the wrong reasons. So it's unlikely that these things are going to change very much very soon, if at all. It looks like our movement's on that path, irrevocably. So what do we do? Well, one thing I discovered from my last series of speeches on this subject, it was a big discovery for me. I'd never been much interested in the internet prior to that, but the internet is a very powerful medium because these lectures got out on the internet and then many people heard them, and well, from my point of view, apart from the offenses that were made, no doubt, some of our God brothers and others were offended. But the points that I made, or crudely as they may have been made, they resonated with many devotees who feel that there's something intrinsically wrong. Although many devotees don't, because they join the movement and from day one they've known it as a Hindu welfare academized movement. They don't know what it's supposed to be or what it was. Those who are into Hindu welfare academization, they think this is what it should be. That's why they present it like that. So why should I bother so much? We can just chant Hare Krishna and be happy, right? That's what we preach to everyone else. We're just tiny jivas. We won't be in these bodies very long. But as disciples of Srila Prabhupada, you know, we feel strongly for Prabhupada's movement and somehow can't be content just to chant Hare Krishna and watch the whole thing float down a different channel than the one that goes back to Godhead. I remember years ago, myself and Jnanananda Prabhu, we met Tamal Krishna Maharaj in Singapore, and we expressed that this is in like mid-1980s or something, and we were expressing, that was a time of tremendous turbulence in our movement. Nowadays there's not much turbulence, although the deviations are much greater, but it's just like, you know, it's just this idea of, well, everything's okay kind of syndrome has set in. So there's a lot of turbulence in our movement, and myself and Jnanananda Prabhu at that time, now he's saying, as he expressed that, some concerns to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and he said that, well, the fact that you're disturbed suggests that you're not well situated in spiritual life. I'm paraphrasing what he said. He said that people that they're unhappy because their minds are agitated because they're not situated properly in Krishna consciousness, and they express that through the medium of discontent with the movement. There may be some truth in that also, but it's not necessarily true that everyone who's discontent is discontent simply because they're meditating on the objects of the senses, which is the cause of discontent, mundane discontent. It's just like one of my godbrothers said to me recently when GBC member. I think he's a GBC member. I'm not sure. At least he's an ex-GBC. And we were discussing all these matters arising from my last series of lectures. He said that many times I would be sure I was right, but then when I met Prabhupada, he wouldn't ratify that. So that may be. But it also doesn't mean that when you think you're right, that it's necessarily wrong. That doesn't follow also. So anyway, even though I'm a tiny jiva and I won't be in this world very long, and even though there seems to be very little hope at the present time for radically altering our movement, even if, for instance, we wanted to stop the midday meals program, which has been renamed something else, at least in Bombay, it's been renamed something else. It'd be very difficult to do so because we have so many commitments and people have donated so much for these kitchens and this and that. It's just like in Bombay, in Juhu, they started this school, which is basically a mundane school within the property of the temple. And after some years, they realized this is far more headache they got far more headache out of it than any benefit, with no transcendental benefit. And so they wanted to close it down. And the local people who send their kids there were adamantly against it. And made it. So now they got some land and they're going to build a new school outside the campus of ISKCON Hare Krishna Land, just to perpetuate that school. So, yeah, even if you want to get out of it, it's very difficult. You may not be able to once it's started. It's something like Abhimanyu. He enters and he can't get out. He's trapped in there. So anyway, something is compelling me to speak for better or for worse. It's also accused of holier than thou. There's a saying in English where holier than thou means self-righteousness, that you think you're right and everyone who doesn't agree with you is all wrong. So there may be some element of that. We should also be careful of that and not just think that everyone who doesn't agree with me is completely bogus. We should be very careful of such an attitude, because that in itself will be offensive, and could very well lead to our fall down, thinking in such a way. At the same time, we can't just sacrifice our principles and what we understand from reading Prabhupada's books and listening to what he says. You just can't sacrifice that because someone has a different opinion. Or may have a different. Having a different opinion is one thing, but just changing the whole ethos of the movement. At least it should be recognized that the whole ethos of our movement has been changed. We're not what Prabhupada said to establish Varnashram. We are not preaching Hinduism. At least it should be recognized that we have changed. When members of the public think of us as a social welfare movement, then at least those who object to what I'm saying should recognize that the movement has significantly changed, and that at least you should understand that there are grounds to be discontent. Now, maybe you have to communicate better to us why you're doing is what Prabhupada wanted us to do, when it seems to myself and others that it's quite clearly not what Prabhupada wanted us to do. So, holier than thou, I'm sorry, but I plead guilty to that accusation. But what to do? I mean, we have to say something. All right. And in the meantime, we will chant Hare Krishna and be happy. It's not that we're stopping doing that. In fact, that's what we want to do. And others are also chanting Hare Krishna. Of course, nowadays we have the musical approach and the muscle approach. You know, the big muscles pounding on the mridangas. That's those who are at the what's that called? Kirtan Melas. They've seen such. They know such things. So we'll go on. We're doing that. All right, Hare Krishna. Any comments?
I have a question.
You have a question, yeah?
But some people see these changes which took place in ISKCON as a positive thing, as a growing up.
Many, those who propound these changes, they see it as positive. Definitely they do. As growing up, our movement is maturing. Instead of fighting with the demoniacs, we don't say that anymore. Instead of fighting with society, we learn to live at peace with them. Isn't that more saintly? Yeah, isn't it? The only thing is that I heard from Prabhupada again and again that we should fight this demoniac civilization. That's a problem, isn't it? Was that just something Prabhupada was saying to us when we were young and in the rebellious spirit just to get us going, or did he mean it, actually? And Prabhupada also said that the fighting is not with swords, but with bombs. The bombs are the books. But Srila Prabhupada definitely wanted to effect a major change in human civilization. For instance, closing the slaughterhouses, closing the factories. So, that will come about by fighting, not by smiling, simply smiling at others. Some fighting has to be there. It's easier to smile and others smile back at you. That's true. But that's not what Prabhupada told us to do.
And it seems that
So it seems we're more mature because we can interact with others and tell them we have programs feeding the poor and educating them. We have schools to educate the children so they can help to build the nation and all this kind of thing.
But it seems that this...
We're not challenging the status quo. That's the thing. Prabhupada was challenging the status quo. The whole idea... First of all, the whole idea that we can be happy in this material world, that has been challenged by every Vaishnava Acharya since time immemorial. Narad Muni with Daksha, for instance. And particularly the whole of modern society, like I said, slaughterhouses, an educational system for educating people to become of Shudra mentality, so that they think my welfare is to get a degree and then get a job, which not only spiritually kills their prospects, but even materially, they're locked into some horrible way of life. As we see, most people in the world today, and especially in the mechanized world, they spend most of their lives doing things which they do not like to do. Most people don't like their job, but they just do it. They don't take pleasure in what they're doing, but they do it because they have to earn some money. to support their family and to buy the things which helps to keep the whole economy rolling on. But people are not happy. So even materially, change is required. But no one has any idea. Prabhupada had the idea. Many people today, they don't want to go along with modern society. But they're looking for an alternative. But nowadays, instead of giving the alternative, we want to join part of, to hold hands with the people who are screwing the whole thing up, messing it all up. We could be a very powerful voice if we stood up and said, hey, look, this is the alternative, this is the way to do it. We could be. Of course, our own recent history is scarred by child abuse, and that's also a fact. But our response to that should not be to go into permanent retreat. But stand up and fight.
This mundane secular established university, established scholars say that actually this is, they have all kinds of explanations that this is kind of that history repeats itself, that so many movements came like this and they went to exactly the same. Our movement went
right. The sociologists, come anthropologists, they say the typical history of a charismatic religious movement. There's a charismatic founder who has a program to change the world, and then after he passes away, it just the motive of changing the world gradually just becomes part of being part of the world. So, okay, 8 out of 10 for the sociologists. But if we have faith, which is a reasonable faith, that Srila Prabhupada was not just another charismatic religious leader, but that he is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, presenting the Vedic knowledge, which is not like some, you know, wacko, childish theology like they have in Christianity, for instance, but is actually in sync with the absolute truth and can give all solutions to human society. And that's how Prabhupada preached in the West in particular. He would say, Varnashram. Yeah, he went in Sweden, Uppsala University, Sweden, the most socialistic country in the world, and preached about the four orders. On a reasonable basis, he said that people, if they were tall intelligent, should be able to understand that they're always in society. We see there are different classes of men. There's an intelligent class, a ruling class, a mercantile class, and a laborer class. So he said, Prabhupada said, just recognize this and train people accordingly and engage them accordingly. It makes sense. Like in these communist revolutions, they try to make the intellectuals into farm laborers. And they take the factory workers and make them the president of the country. And what can you expect in such a country? They have these, communism was supposed to be a good idea, but always someone becomes the leader. All are equal, that's the idea, but always it has to be one who becomes. And in the democratic system also, they elect a leader who, either prime minister or president. In the United States, it's the president. In this country, it's supposed to be the prime minister who's the leader. And they repose power in one person. And there's supposed to be checks and balances, just like in America, the president can have no more than 2 terms, 8 years. And in In Britain, they could go on theoretically all through their life, but they're put to the vote at least once every 5 years. So there's supposed to be some checks and balances. But what's actually going on is that the leaders of the countries, they're puppets themselves. And the real power is reposed in some bankers and military people. In fact, modern democracy, in many ways, it controls people more than in the communist dictatorship. At least in the communist dictatorship, you knew who was manipulating you. But you don't even know who's pulling the strings in the modern society. But controlled you are by the big corporate interests. It's always that who has got power, who's the more intelligent in manipulating others, they take power. It's never going to be that all are equal. The masses are stupid. So the Vedic system, as Prabhupada would explain, is that you recognize people's propensities and train them from a young age according to their propensities. Then they'll be happy throughout their life. Brahmin likes to study. Kshatriya, a real Kshatriya, he's trained how to do what his inherent Kshatra karma swabhavajam. He's born with that propensity. Ishvara bhav in this sense doesn't mean to lord it over and exploit others, but it means that when he sees someone, just like the helpless people, like the cows, the brahmanas, the women, the old people, the children, he cannot tolerate to see them being exploited, and he'll immediately take his sword, or in the modern age, gun or whatever, and punish the person. That's a kshatriya, not someone who's sitting with, get some title and sign some legislature. Kshatriya is someone who cannot tolerate to see others being exploited. Kshatriya means protects them from hurt. So people should be trained like that in such a way. People, even now in India, you see that, in Bangladesh years ago, I remember someone said that this land, if you brought a bunch of Taiwanese in, the same land, that within short time they'd turn this into a gold mine. Because what happened historically, all the landlords, they left or were killed. All the intelligent people either were left or were killed, in the intelligent class. And so you're left with a bunch of people who were formerly workers on the land. They now own the land. And they're not very efficient. There are certain people, like in Gujarat, the Patels. They're natural farmers. Vaishya karma swabhavajam. It's born in them. They know how to do, when they go to business, they know how to do business. It's just very natural for them. But if you give the same land to a brahmana, he may not be so good. Or to a work. That happened now. They divide the land and they gave the land to the tillers. And they're not so expert in farming. So, the point I'm making is that Prabhupada presented all these points in a very intelligent, in a reasonable manner that intelligent people could understand. And we should do the same. Even though people may object to it, but if they're at all reasonable and intelligent and actually concerned with the welfare of others, then why should they object? That's the point I'm making. Just like Prabhupada with the university scholars. So you do not know who is God, therefore you cannot be called theologians. Who can object to that? Prabhupada was challenging. People say, you cannot know God. And Prabhupada said, why? Why you cannot know? You don't know God, but that doesn't mean I don't know God. If I can give a presentation of the nature of God, you don't have any, but I can tell you, complete with six opulences, the supreme enjoyer, the origin of everything, therefore not impersonal, the most beautiful, attractive, loving. Who can object? Prabhupada was forceful in presenting, this is better, you should take this. But that in modern relativistic society, the idea is that no one knows anything properly, except the scholars in the university, and therefore everyone's opinion is as good as anyone else, and you shouldn't assert that you know better than others. Of course, that's because we have all kinds of nutcases asserting that they know better than others. Just like you get these obnoxious so-called Christians who preach, and actually such people, yeah, they shouldn't, such people, they misrepresent religion. But if someone can intelligently present it, why not do so when we do have the knowledge by which human society can be benefited? Why, as I believe Jesus is reported as saying that, why put your candle under a bushel, or you have a light to light up, why put it under a cover so that it doesn't light anything? Yeah. Prabhupada's instructions for an ideal GBC. Well, there are various. Prabhupada said they should all be acharya-like, the GBC members, and said they should set the example by. They should travel to the different centers and see that everyone in the center is rising early, chanting 16 rounds, following the regulated principles, going on sankirtan, reading the books, and they should do so themselves. And in this way, others will follow. That's he said many things. These are some of the basic instructions about the GBC members. If I was offered the post of a GBC, I was recently, but I immediately declined. Several of our Indian leaders have been saying we should have more Indian GBCs, as the energy of the movement is here, whereas there are so many in America, because the energy of the movement used to be in America. But then others think we shouldn't join the GBC for reasons I won't say here now. I'll tell you afterward. Now, I also don't think, I think the younger people should be on the GBC. Let younger people take it up now. Anyway, within 10, 15, maximum 20 years, the whole GBC will be totally reconstituted, because the present members will either have, you know, gone into samadhi, or they'll be physically incapable of being members. So anyway, it's going to change. So let the young people come up. That's what I'm thinking more now. I see this Gurukul as this is our real hope. To train people from the beginning. There's so many activities to do in so many spheres, Prabhupada's disciples, I'm among the youngest of Prabhupada's disciples. We're all old people now. It's like this Anna Hazare, he was asked if he's interested in going to politics, and they said, I'm already 70 years old. So, for those of you who read the newspapers, like me, at least I read the headlines. Yeah, it doesn't make sense, does it, to go into politics at the age of 70? So I also feel that the time for that is over. There are many things I'd like to do. As older people often say, if I could lead my life again, I'd do so many things differently. I would have probably learn Sanskrit. I still wouldn't have joined the GBC. I'm not against the GBC institution at all. And how can you be if you're a follower of Prabhupada? Because he emphasized it so much. And the GBC members are also making, it's a great sacrifice to be a GBC member. Even to sit through those meetings, so many meetings, that in itself for me is not to be a GBC member. It's a great austerity. I don't think there's anyone in the world who has a natural inclination to sit through days and days of meetings with all kinds, difficult matters to discuss. So I would have probably not gone on the GBC. There are other things. I might have learned Tamil. But, now there's not much time left. And I see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he wanted to write so many books, but he didn't have time. Don't we wish he wrote them? Prabhupada wanted to translate so many more books. He didn't have time. Krishna called him back. So we don't have so much time. Yeah, you wanted to say something? Yeah.
Well, yesterday you were saying that our movement faced a lot of difficulty, like banning Bhagavad Gita, and then they wanted to close down our temple in Hungary.
Yeah.
It was saved by playing the Hindu card.
Our movement was saved by playing the Hindu card in Russia and in Hungary. Yeah. There are, I'm not saying there are not advantages to playing the Hindu card. Possibly it could have been done without invoking the Hindu card also. You could have just used a different terminology. It would have been more difficult if you had said that there, without using the word Hindu, if we'd have said that there are millions of people all over the world who believe in Bhagavad Gita, we could say that, we could have preached to the Hindus also and told them that actually this Hindu word, it's not a good word. It was a pejorative term given by Muslims. It's presumed to have. It's not a Shastric word. And we could have preached to them also. So that what is the real Vedic culture. But once, it's easier just to use the word Hindu, but then you become caught up in that also. Srila Prabhupada was somehow expert enough, or somehow means by transcendentally inspired, but he wanted us to be transcendentally inspired also, that he would blast the scholars and get them to endorse him also. He made some enemies along the way, no doubt. But if you're going to preach, you can expect enemies. If your main goal in life is to avoid having enemies, then you're definitely going to be absolutely insignificant. So you may think, well, being insignificant is good for a Vaishnava. That's true. But we don't want Krishna's movement to be insignificant.
Last year or earlier this year, there was a big gala event in Mumbai.
There was a gala event and with all the leading movie stars. People like to see movie stars.
And in this program, ISKCON, they got the award for the best social service organization.
And in this event, ISKCON got the award for the best social... I think you're getting things mixed up here. You're talking about two different things.
There was a program in which they were awarding the people in different fields.
Oh, was it? They were awarding people in different fields. And ISKCON got the award for the best social service. In this way, the general public are appreciating us.
They are getting this idea that is...
But, yeah, they are appreciating us for being a social service organization. And those who promote this, they see this, they're appreciating us, and then we can present our spiritual message. But there are others who say that our spiritual message from the outset is compromised by presenting ourselves as a social service organization. So that's where the difference comes. You may get many people to chant Hare Krishna, but not with a clear understanding of why they're doing it. Just like some of our devotees, there was a flood in one area of India, and they went there and distributed, our devotees went there and distributed Kami bread and biscuits. Then afterwards, some organization from the West wanted to donate a lot of money for building houses for the flood victims. So they gave it to ISKCON because they thought ISKCON's the best organization to do it. So in this way, you get entangled one thing after another. And our energy, which should go in promoting Krishna consciousness strongly and clearly, gets compromised. So it may be that some householders or whatever do that kind of thing, but it's householder devotees. They may do that kind of thing. But when it becomes promoted as mainstream ISKCON, then we've lost our mission purpose. And those who promote this kind of thing, they say, you're serious, just some grihasthas, they're not actually ISKCON. But then the government itself or whatever gives us an award for being a social service organization. So that's the way we're seen by the public. And our ISKCON leaders go there to accept the award. They're not being praised for their contribution to spiritual knowledge. They're being praised for their contribution to feeding school children so that we can build a nation. Which is totally mundane purpose. Yeah, you were going to ask something? Can we consider this as the effect of Kali Yuga? Certainly you can consider it. Yeah.
I was imagining Shuddha mentality, so I was wondering if Shuddha mentality should be promoted in ISKCON?
Should the Shudra mentality be promoted in ISKCON? Not at all. Srila Prabhupada wanted this movement to be a Brahminical movement, to give the clear understanding to human society. Not that people of Shudra mentality cannot take advantage of this movement and be benefited by it, but it should be, this movement is supposed to be for giving spiritual knowledge and guidance to society, which is a Brahminical function. And anyone of any mentality or background can chant Hare Krishna and become a Vaishnava and become in a situation which is better than that of a Brahmana. But this movement is specifically meant for giving spiritual guidance, which is the work within human society of those who are designated as Brahmanas. Mm. Kali Yuga mentality. Why do we endeavor? Yeah, Prabhupada was asked, why do we endeavor to preach so much when Kali Yuga is overwhelming? It's the Lord's design that there be Kali Yuga. Predestined that Kali Yuga is there. Just like you know the rainy season, Prabhupada replied, just like you know the rainy season will come, you take an umbrella.
So we can save people.
We can save people, yeah. There's this sentimental story which sometimes gets posted around on ISKCON conferences of there being thousands of starfish washed up on the beach, and someone is and they're like flapping and just going to drown or the opposite of drowning in the air because they need water to live in, and someone is walking along picking them up and throwing them in, and someone else comes along and says, what are you doing, you know, you can only save a few out of millions. And the person says, yeah, but at least I'm saving a few. So you do what you can.
You said that maybe the younger people can take up the role of the GBC.
Maybe younger people can take up the role of GBCs. That would be preferable, yeah.
But then
if they'd been trained. First they should have a clear understanding of what Prabhupada's mission is. Yeah. The younger generation is being trained by the older generation. Yeah, so the older generation will perpetuate. Those who are in power now, actually GBC, how much power they have. They do have considerable power, no doubt, but it's... Unfortunately, many devotees, for historical or whatever reasons, don't care much for the GBC at all. But still, I mean, they have... They can make rules which changes the movement, that's for sure. They have power, yeah. So yeah, the younger generation is being trained by the older generation.
And you see that the older generation is like deviated, right?
The older generation is deviated.
Naturally,
well, if you put it in those terms, yeah, I mean, this over-stressing or casting our identity as Hindu, I would call that a deviation. This stressing our movement as being a social welfare movement, I would call that a deviation. Past life regression, deviation, laughter therapy, singing with Mayavadis. I didn't say that. I won't deny it also.
Attending conferences with
Mayavadis, there could be some scope for that. Could be, but not in a general way. I mean, yeah, jointly doing programs. I don't think. Prabhupada did actually, like the Sadhu Sammelan in Bombay in the early days when he didn't have his own temples. But he would blast the Mayavadis. He'd make it clear that they were different. There's that narration in Kub, I think it's pronounced, I don't know how it's pronounced, someplace in Japan. Right. There was somehow or other, Burijan Prabhu had arranged a program. There was supposed to be some Mayavadi guru speaking first. And he was speaking in Hindi so that Prabhupada's disciples didn't know what he was saying, because at that time Prabhupada had hardly any Hindi-speaking disciples. So he was going, this Mayavadi was going on speaking, and Prabhupada was sitting there chanting japa. And all of a sudden, in the middle of his speech, Prabhupada stood up and said, "Stop him!" And devotee started doing kirtan, and they're completely insulting to the Mayavadi, and completely alienated all of his followers who were there. Then afterward, Burijan Prabhu asked, "Well, why did you listen so long?" And then say stop. And Prabhupada said, "What he was saying at first wasn't so bad, but when he got openly offensive, then I had to stop him." So that was all the people that Burijan had been cultivating all the time. With two words of Prabhupada, you go totally alienated. I guess Prabhupada was immature, according to modern understanding. Also, when he was on the Vyasasan, they were supposed to share the Vyasasan. Prabhupada said, "Forget it, I'm not going to share the Vyasasan." In many instances like that. There was, in Paris, they had an official welcome for Prabhupada, and they were told what they were supposed to do. That Prabhupada was supposed to stand up. And then when they told Prabhupada to stand up, when the mayor entered, Prabhupada said, "Who shall I stand up for?" He refused to stand up for the mayor of Paris, or whatever he was called, which was a complete infraction of protocol. You know, they have all these rules which you're supposed to, but Prabhupada, he refused. "I'm not going to stand up." He didn't want to stand up to honor some meat eater. He followed his own etiquette, that others should stand for him being the acharya, which they have no idea of him being an acharya or any such thing. So Prabhupada shouldn't be imitated. But also, he shouldn't be imitated, but he should be followed. So we should neither imitate, nor should we fail to follow. And with those words, I will finish this morning's, whatever you want to call it. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.